April 12, 2009, here's SWAT from Pedro Show.
To vanish at any moment. The seven colors arching upwards and disappearing into thin air. Precariously sensitive. But will the real to grow straight, to stretch out for the stars? I should be able to touch them.
What from Pedro Show? Happy Easter, Brother Matt.
Happy Easter.
Yeah. Started the show off with The Night We Called It a Day by John Coltrane, and then something off the new Migu album called Rainbow, third Migu album. They're going to have a release gig in Tokyo at the beginning of September or the end of August, and they asked me to come and play.
Cool.
Also, I've been invited to play another gig there. When I was on playing on my birthday at the Wijami Kano 2008 festival, it was recorded and songs are coming out on a compilation. That's going to has a release party too, and it's kind of a little mini festival too. There's like three different, you know, they have their clubs sometimes in the same building on different floors. That strip.
Have opening band downstairs, next band up.
Yeah, those are different clubs, but all united for this event. Like on my birthday, there was two, and they were in the same.
Wow, cool
building. Yeah, go up this little elevator; it holds like three people. I found the stairs and did that because it's like I got to see every band though. There's 14 bands, and also Jim O'Rourke lives there, you know.
Right.
And he said he's always wanted to do a duo record with me, so maybe we do that.
Oh, cool.
Because Nails can't come.
Oh.
So it'll be a brother-sister-daughter version without him, because he's got too much commitment, too many gig, and recording things up. But he'll go in December. We'll go in December and make another album. And Mr. Shimmy should have this mixed, this one we did back in December done.
And he's going to be coming here soon?
Yeah, he is, because Cornelius is playing with Deerhoof. Someone's knocking. And so and Nels will be here too, so they get to meet, but I'll be on tour.
Nice to meet you. Good, how are you?
Oh, we have guests. Hey, Stace.
How's it going?
Come on down.
Just did a lot of practice.
Oh, good.
Welcome.
With Tom Watson and Raul.
I don't know, just a little something. I don't know.
We got a guest today, Stacy Bankston from Regan Project Galleries.
Welcome.
Besides Raymond, you're the only art. Is it Patron?
Yeah. Little cute little baby
Very
bottle.
Cute.
I got it because they're cute.
Good job.
Oh, you know.
And little bourbons.
Yeah.
Knob Creek and Maker Mark.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think Raymond's the only other art person that's been on. Was Gomez on the show?
Yeah, he was here once.
So,
Mark.
You know, no.
Gomez.
Gomez. Bueno.
Oh, man. Oh.
He's from Spain,
Canary Islands.
Santander in the north, right next to Basque Country.
Oh, cool.
And, so, okay, you're the third one.
I'm the third.
So, well, you don't have a...
Number three.
But you have a... You're different. Where they're like people who work in their pads, and your place is what that shows them.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know much about that. You know, I've been to things with Raymond, and it's kind of scary. There's stuff's hanging up there, and then everybody comes in and talks about it. It's different than a gig. It's a gig for them, but theirs is different. You don't... Everything's all done and just sitting there. And so, yeah, I'm interested in the stuff behind that. Kind of mysterious. How does somebody get a gig there and get discovered?
Yeah, that's not an easy question. It's, you know, it's not something like, and a lot of people like will come in the gallery, and ask if, you know, we accept submissions.
Yeah,
or people
you just
can
walk off the street.
Yeah, you know, just bring in your portfolio. A lot of it comes from, I think, making work, you know, first and foremost, and then it sort of comes, like the talent comes, and people talk and discover, and it's just as much a social network as it is anything else. It's hard to for anything to, you know, sort of.
It's kind of catch 22.
Yeah, you can't live in a bubble, you know, but it
like
is hard.
You have to get a reputation, but how do you get a reputation if nobody knows your stuff?
Exactly. Maybe I mean, the people who want to know, though, always have their eyes and ears out.
Who's new?
Yeah, and they're, you know, naturally curious and, you know, sort of seeing who's doing interesting things and always pushing the envelope. It's never so easy. It's never that easy that someone will just bring you, like, fantastic work and you say, oh, I want to show this, and it turns into a great relationship and a long-term thing. It, you know, it's just as much about the relationship with the artist as it is with the work, you know, and we're finding more and more.
I'm thinking of that Monk's Rules thing where he said, don't sound for gigs, just be on the scene.
That's one way to do it, but that doesn't always work. There are some artists who work like that, though, too. But I think the best is, you know, the artists who...
It's the works, right?
It's the work. The work speaks for itself.
Well, maybe you should get into your thing. How did you get into this field?
That's a good question. I've always been interested in art and always working with artists. And after I just studied art history in school. And after school, I worked in the nonprofit field, like... Because I went to school in Colorado, and in Denver there wasn't really a commercial art scene, and it was very regional and very sort of insular. So I worked for a large sort of regional nonprofit that was a branch or started by the NEA. So it granted organizations money to give money to artists. So it was sort of like three
National
times removed.
For the arts.
Exactly. Exactly. And while it was interesting, like arts policy can be, or arts, you know, some of the slowest government, you know, change there is. So I did that for a little bit and moved to the Bay Area and continued to do it and raising money and things like this and sort of, you know, trying my best to sort of like feel fulfilled and feel like I was making a difference and, you know, changing, but not having that direct sort of relationship because there's always like we're always sort of an intermediary. So I decided I wanted a change again, so I moved to L.A. about 5 years ago, and I thought, it was between L.A. and New York, and I thought, one of those cities, and I'm going to work at a gallery, and I'm going to
those are the
artists.
Two big towns.
Yeah, those are the national towns. I mean, every, you know, major city, you could say, in America has at least a regional scene. Like in Denver, there was definitely a regional scene, but those artists that, you know, were really well known and had like sort of the big reputations in Denver, like were very seldom known outside of it. But LA,
so they have to like move.
Yeah, I feel like LA and New York have real international presence. Chicago too, to an extent. I mean, there are other anomalies.
San Francisco
too, but the two biggies have to be LA and New York, and
some smaller towns too. I know Santa Fe in New Mexico.
Santa Fe, certainly, yeah, sort of a different. You know,
I don't really know
scene.
It. I know of it because I've played the town and yeah. I can tell.
And they definitely have a gallery scene,
yeah.
And it's a different kind of, you know, not so much contemporary. I mean, it is contemporary art, but not so much what I'm interested in or like what, you know, things are doing.
Who was there early on? Was Georgia O'Keeffe?
Georgia O'Keeffe, towards that, exactly.
Yeah,
got a lot of inspiration there.
And you know, see a lot of license plates from New England and people who come there.
Yeah.
They've got some kind of trippy rules where you build houses, you got to make it like the Adobe scene, preserve the look, like a town's a piece of art.
Ah, exactly. Well, that's interesting.
Charleston's like that, too. You can't just bring put in stucco condo.
Mm.
You have to fit in.
Yeah, up in PV's or neighborhoods.
It's like
too,
that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So plant communities.
But these are more like Charleston's historic. It's almost like New England for the South. And
definitely.
So they, yeah, want to kind of preserve that.
That.
It didn't get burned. So,
which is good.
Yeah, it's unusual because most southern towns don't, even though
they're
old,
back that far.
No.
They don't have the stuff because of the war.
Exactly,
the war.
It got destroyed, right?
You come to SoCal.
Yeah.
And what, you go to Sean Regan's place, you just not come?
No, I've worked for Sean for about 2 years. Before that, I worked at a couple other galleries. My first gallery was in Santa Monica that I worked at. And learned a lot, and then went to another gallery that worked a lot with really young artists, which I found really interesting and fulfilling. And then started to work for Sean about 2 years ago. So
yeah.
It's been a really good sort of progression. I've learned a lot in each stage, and it has been a lot more what I thought I wanted and needed, which was really that direct interaction and working with artists, because it's sort of the most fulfilling.
Now, the NEA, that thing, people did submit art.
Yeah, there were. They used to give individual artist grants. And
that's based on this, people.
Yeah.
Here's my work. Can I get funded?
And they did, at its inception, fund some really nice artists, but it got really controversial.
Yeah, right.
Extremely controversial. The
Piss
government
Christ.
Fund. Yep, exactly. That government funds would be going to this sort of means. But maybe that's healthy dialogue. I don't know.
Yeah.
I kind of like it, but they don't do it
anymore. It kind of gave them people who wanted money going to, the arts they wanted an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe
yeah,
some tests what
like.
Was real. Yeah, basically there, but
yeah, it's like so subjective. It's the same thing with like the other thing I studied in school was public art, because it forces people.
Public art is funded, or is
a lot of
art?
It. A lot of it's, well, it's a mix, but, you know, sort of my first introduction to, like, the general public and their sort of, you know, forced interaction with art, contemporary or not, and, you know, if they like it or don't. And so it's sort of interesting to see how people could get so worked up, especially if it's government-funded, even private-funded things that would get, if it's in the public sort of realm.
Because it's got to be shared.
Exactly.
So, yeah, there was something with that big bow and arrow up in San Francisco. People said they didn't like it.
Yeah, any art that's going to get people activated, though, is pretty good.
It is. I think so, too. At least it creates a dialogue, you know, or, like, some sort of community.
Yeah,
the people that don't like it.
If they strongly don't like it, at least they got a reaction out of them.
That's one way to put it. And it exposes them to something they probably would never expose themselves to on their own. I don't know, good or bad.
I think in the old days, art was more like shit hoarding, right? Mm-hmm. You put in your little private thing at home.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably still a lot of that of rich people.
Mm-hmm.
Or then you used it to put a spin on your own image.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You made a lot of money, maybe not in such a nice way. Now you can be a philanthropist.
Yeah, it's like give back to the community.
So it's, right. So public art is kind of wielded.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because it comes from the, like, if you look back at public art, it starts with like memorials, you know, which are really, you know, sort of,
and churches, religion,
exactly,
and government buildings,
a lot of that, and so the ties there are really sort of strong and already controversial, but fascinating,
and maybe a lot of pressure on the artists to conform
or not, or just to like fight for their vision.
Yeah, I know with the Vietnam Memorial.
Maya Lin.
Yeah.
Yes, that was
she
extreme.
She had to fight.
Extremely. And she was so young when she did it. She was just finished undergrad. And that's a fascinating story, Maya Lin, with that one. But
yeah,
it's the
she's
most.
She's still making work.
Yeah,
right?
She's like sort of architect / artist. But she, I mean, that's the most visited memorial in the mall.
Yeah, so
and it's got to be.
It was worth her fighting.
Absolutely,
for
it's got to be the most sort of minimal, unbronze thing that's there, you know. But it's so effective in like memorializing the loss of those lives. Like,
that was maybe because the subject itself is so heavy and dividing.
Yeah.
That, of course, anything trying to deal with it on an artistic way was going to bring some of that.
Mm-hmm. Those feelings up, exactly. That was a tough one. Had to be a really...
Here, let's listen to some music. Thank you. Okay, we just heard a jam live. It was a live jam, and that's all I know the name of the song. Soju?
Yeah.
Almost like soju. You know what soju is?
Yeah.
It's like the what kind,
huh? Exactly.
226, and then Paris is America by Manflu. That's my buddy Willie, who lives in England now, and is playing again after a long time not. I used to conk on his pad regularly, New York City. Speaking of which, Friday I leave out to conk at more pads.
Yeah.
And we had a cracking third opera tour with Miss Man, Tom Watson, and Raul Morales. And we started with W by Jean Jutu, and that's W, like letter of my name. Well, Brother Matt, you were talking about public art at Burning Man.
Yeah, we were having a little art chat, and we were talking about Tom.
Right, Tom Watson.
Yeah, Joe Baez.
Besides guitar playing. And Joe by the way, Joe Baez just had the surgery. In fact, he thinks it came from packing that art and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But also the guitar. Carpal tunnel.
Yeah.
Terrible. He couldn't even hold a piece of paper. And the surgery was successful, so he's healing back.
Heal up quick.
And we're going to work on a fourth unknown instructor when he gets better. And I get back. So
we were talking about how one of their jobs is assembling and packing art after the exhibit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I was talking about the public art at Burning Man and what a job that is to assemble it. Most of it's partially created wherever it's coming from.
Yeah.
There are shops and studios, and then it's hauled out there in moving vans or whatever, and then assembled. And then if it's not burned down, then it has to be
taken away. Yeah.
And taken away and then reassembled someplace else. And what an incredible job that is to put everything back in proper order so that somebody else can put it back together.
Yeah. Stace, what do you think about the presentation of the art? You know, the way the gallery is set up, or the exhibit, like in a museum, or... You know, it puts it in the context. Which painting is going to be sitting next to which painting?
Yeah.
Are the artists themselves in charge of that? Or is that the gallery people?
You know, usually it's very much a collective effort. I mean, it's the...
Like Raymond sometimes has a couple hundred pieces.
Yeah, like bottom line is it's the artist show. And if they have a vision of how they want it to be seen, we do our best to make that happen. But, you know, we're there too for input. And, you know, on the museum side too, if a curator curates like a group show of maybe like, you know, a number of artists, they may have a vision of like a new way for, you know, if a, you know, a Piet Mondrian is near a Yayoi Kusama or one of these artists, that just to get new ideas, you know, for people to see art that they may have seen before. Yeah, makes it in a different context or things like that. Sort of sometimes old, new. It just depends. So,
or maybe the subject. Maybe this piece has a thing that relates to another piece or a contrast. I could see it being very critical.
Yeah, so there's a lot that goes in. I mean, sometimes the best ones look effortless, I think.
Yeah, right.
The best
like
ones.
Natural.
Just like it was supposed to be like that. It's the ones when you walk in and you're just not, you don't quite get it or you don't quite see the vision where, you know, it wasn't quite as successful.
That's kind of an art in itself.
Like. It absolutely is. It's like absolutely hanging a show.
Sometimes maybe you get too much stuff, then there's got to be some kind of editing. Some stuff don't get shown.
Sometimes. I mean, it goes both ways. I mean, sometimes it's nice. To have the ability to edit is sometimes a
more
luxury.
Than you need.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Raymond tells me there's kind of a problem with galleries because it separates. We were talking about public art, which is put to be shared with people. And he says sometimes it's the same people who go to the galleries and it's not inclusive enough, he's telling me. So you got people like Shepard.
Yeah, who's doing...
Who, like, foists.
Yeah.
Gets arrested by the police. You know, the Obey.
Obama and Hope.
Oh, yeah.
But before that, with
Andre
the Giant,
Obey.
He'd go on like tours with the wheat paste. Robbie Cotto did this too.
Mm-hmm.
Where they put up,
they
make the towns the gallery and put it right there.
Mm-hmm.
And Shepard's fighting some copyright issues and also some vandalism issues.
Yeah, it's all over.
In Boston.
Mm-hmm.
He was telling me he came to that gig at the... Yeah, what is going on with the Bergamot station? Because that's in danger, I heard.
I've heard things, too, but nothing, like, very sort of under the radar. I don't know.
This is a collection of galleries in Santa Monica.
That's at a, like, a...
Former train station.
Exactly. But the city wants to make it into some sort of resource plant. I'm not even 100% sure. But I've just sort of heard preliminary things, but I haven't heard too much else, so it's hard to know. You know, I mean, think City Hall.
Who's one of the big cats there? About Robert Berman?
Robert Berman is there. Patrick Painter is there. Track 16.
Track 16, which is Patchell? Mr. Patchell?
Tom Patchett.
Tall man. I met him. I had chow. He took Raymond Forchow on that there, and he likes the sunrise pictures.
Oh, bitch.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Should be a coffee table book there.
Yeah, well, he wanted to put them up like a gig, a show. So, but I don't have the nerve.
Oh.
So I'm embarrassed. You know, I like taking those pictures, and I flow them out to my list. I didn't know really people would like them like that. But
yeah, it's an awesome collection that does a slice of life that nobody really gets to peek at unless they get to ride on your kayak with you.
Yeah.
Brother Matt was paddling this morning.
Oh, cool.
It's hard paddling when there's big wind.
Yeah, it's really windy today.
He kind of got in before the wind, and he was saying they're blowing west, which means Santa Ana. Yeah, which are kind of dangerous because they blow on from the desert. Because more of the general trend is for the winds to blow east, easterlies. I know that
cool
too
wind.
When I'm on the bicycle. Yeah, wind is trippy on a bicycle. When it's with you, you can't even hear it if it's to your back. Right. But when you're going against it, it's really loud and very strenuous. You can, like, all your weight on a pedal, and it's almost like you're standing still. Whoa, someone's at the hatch.
Welcome.
Hey, nice how are you?
Is it Bob? Hey, Bob.
Hey, howdy.
How's it going?
Good.
And,
Hey, this is
you're going to enjoy that.
We're on air now. We're talking about art.
Art Cloakie or?
Yeah.
Art Pepper. Art Pepper actually was from Pedro. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
Everybody else.
You know who I found out was from here, too, that I didn't know was Robert Towne.
Really?
The cat who wrote Chinatown.
Oh, yeah.
Two Jakes.
Yeah, because there's a reference to Peter, I think, in the movie.
Yeah. Well, he grew up in that trip.
They're not going to do the third one because the second one bombed, but the third one was my neighborhood. It was about smog. Not going to happen, so we'll have to get Raymond to buy the rights, I guess.
Raymond's in New York City.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a new Fast and Furious of Pedro flick, too.
Really?
Is that right?
Yeah, they're filming that here.
Wow.
Cool. I didn't know that.
All the Usual Suspects?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was weird. It all
came
it's back,
a classic
right?
Pedro flick.
That was Pedro. And I think opening scene of To Live and Die in L.A., not opening, but near the beginning, there's Vincent Thomas with a bungee cord.
Big chase scene.
But a bungee cord jump, he does. I think Friedkin made that one.
Yeah.
I don't know if he knew how to end it. Probably had shot 500 different ends.
Well, we got Invasion of the Body Snatchers original in Sierra Madre.
Was that right?
Yeah.
Was Treasure of Sierra Madre filmed there?
No.
Okay. No. They had their chance.
They should have.
Nobody tells Fred C. Dobbs what to do.
Right. Walter Huston, John Huston both got Oscars. Father-son team. Yeah. And Bogey gets killed.
Bogey was a Bogarter. Literally, my godmother, who now has got a perfect record on birthday cards, she grew up next door to Bogey down Lido Island. He'd send the butler over to bum a bottle of bourbon. And they thought, oh, cool, Bogey. But about 17 bottles later, over the years, they're like hiding. There's Bogey.
Not Bogey, the butler.
Bogarty, yeah. Never returned a single bottle.
You know where the Bogart thing came from? Uh-uh. Because he would do these spiels, you know, soliloquies, monologues, whatever, and you could see the ash on the cigarette get longer and longer. Good old days.
Nice.
What's your thoughts on this? Maybe the gallery's too exclusive.
Oh, I guess I understand. You know, it can be a little intimidating, but you know, in the end, it's just about it's a public space, just like anything else.
And but do you get the same people coming?
You know, inevitably there is like. Regular people who come like our regulars almost, but I feel like we get a good, you know, each show sort of brings a different group more or less. I feel like I've seen lots and lots of faces come through the gallery, some and still see people for the first time come in. And I think, you know, there's a lot more, people are a lot more interested in, I feel like, art these days and going to galleries, so it's sort of nice.
That's a good point. It's more of a happening. The yeah. first time I saw one of Raymond's things was the old Desmond's department store up on Wilshire.
Wow.
Or maybe it was the one on Hollywood, actually.
Ace Gallery?
Yeah, and John Pochna was in there.
Pochna.
And
yeah.
Pochna. He's it's the at cat the end of the thing, out. And he's five yeah, Bud Talls into a sixer. And he's all, we're okay, they're down to $50 now, you know. He's not even supposed to be showing this. This is like the guy you know.
Who had the 01 gallery in Hollywood old days. And Ace was a little after. I think he's got something downtown now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, to kill you.
This was like the fun. Is I kind of liked it. It was kind of fun. I never went to the Zero. What was that like, man?
Was that was David kind Lee of a Roth social thing.
Oh, that's right. You don't do
I
that.
I think he was one of the backers.
David?
Something.
Diamond Day?
Really? Yeah. I didn't exactly know how that worked. But that was like a mixture of rock and roll people. And it's kind of hangout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was that when it kind of got clicky? Like you had a... It wasn't like a velvet rope, but I mean it was...
Oh, you know humans.
Yeah.
Capable of this.
It all de-evolves at some point.
I mean, I guess all artists are different, but a lot of them, they want to reach people, right? Yeah. But at the same time, an artist's thing is about the private vision.
It is an intimate practice, too, for some, for most, I think, because you're really...
They want to have impact.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a trippy, it's a dangling duality.
It is.
Dichotomy.
That's weird how it's, you know, gotten. Yeah, it's a big game now, but, like, even baseball cards, you know, I mean, we would open them up and enjoy them, and, you know, the old days, you'd see Raymond's, you know, they'd already have the pinholes all over them. Now it's a little different, although, yeah.
Pinholes, what, being them flyers and stuck up.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, what do you mean, like, the value changes?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just remember it was worth? Kind of fun not to think about that when I first bought three from him for not much because, you know, I'd worked with him on a thing and I went home and pinned him up just because it was something I could relate to, you know. But then again, I think it's nice.
I remember when I first thought about maybe I should put these in frames because the sun is kind of making them yellow.
Yeah.
Or I didn't use tape. I didn't even use pins.
Oh, I used pins, ripped the corners off. They usually had, some of them had been up already. But, you know, he wasn't using color, and it kind of actually, the baseball ones, you know, were almost better with a little bit of a tobacco juice stain on it or something. You know, kind of fit in with the thing. But
patina.
But now with the colors and everything, I wouldn't want them fading either. You know?
What about, would you call something like eBay a gallery? Does a lot of art move on eBay?
I mean, I've seen things on eBay.
Like speaking of Raymond stuff.
Raymond stuff, that's like a pawn shop for the...
Yeah,
the it's old hard punk crowd,
but hard times, fakes.
Exactly, yeah. That's the hard thing about eBay. You don't always know what you're
and
getting.
And someone with a gallery, they can kind of vouch.
Exactly, you can see the work in person. You can
but
have
I've
a real relationship.
I've heard about museums and galleries having counterfeits. Sometimes they know. Sometimes they don't know.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
It happened.
What was it they had here?
Stolen work.
It wasn't the Getty. It was.
Yeah,
they knew they bought that one piece from Italy. It was shaky, but
well, it was a real piece, but it was stolen. Piece.
Yeah, it was hot. But
there's a big thing, issue too with maybe cultural things or religious things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they shouldn't
be removed.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe they belong to those people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the thing they dug up from, you know, 250 BC at the old Palisades Getty. They had a lot of that. Yeah, in some ways I can see that. But
yeah, stuff pilfered in wars.
Yeah.
Right, Nazis.
Yeah.
Soviet.
Barbarians tearing apart.
Who was the cat? Goering, the airplane guy, he was the big shit hoarder. When they'd come into a land and take it, they'd keep going right for all the good art.
Mm.
Yeah. Intense. I think there's probably a long history of that.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, if you look at, like, the city of Venice, like, almost all their art is stolen.
Yeah, you're going to go conquer some place and like, take all their cool stuff.
Their hype's so rich.
That's why they write all those suspense songs. They write those suspense novels.
Exactly.
The Middle Ages, coming out of the Middle Ages, Renaissance, they had the biggest navy. People don't realize that, but Venice was big wheel.
Huge.
Then they started, you know, the patron stuff.
Yeah.
In the old days, I guess that's how you had to do art. You had to find, like, a sugar daddy.
Yeah, like a church. Wagner.
Yeah, someone to commission things.
You know, you had to.
So nowadays, by having galleries, by having eBay or something, artists can support himself and actually do
what they want.
And more have more autonomy, yeah. Because if you're doing it work for the whoever,
for the church,
they're going to approve or disapprove. You have to sneak in things. I think even with the, what's his name? His stuff's up there with Raymond's. Rivera, huh? Oh. Some mural got painted over.
Oh, yeah, Diego Rivera.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was commissioned by Rockefeller. Mm-hmm.
Didn't like this?
No.
Oh, you got Karl Marx's face on there.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going.
That's wild how that ends up.
So in a way, it being in a private hand and somebody who can vouch for, I could see it being a better thing.
Yeah. But, you know, the delivery system, I mean, the exposure now,
yeah.
You could scan your stuff and the whole world can see it. Maybe it's good that Van Gogh's brother Theo was more kindly as a brother and not really pushing hard, because otherwise maybe Vinny would have been checked out at 27 like all our rock and rollers, you know. He might not have made it. Those last couple of years, you know, he put out a lot of stuff, and if I think he would have freaked out the way someone like Cobain or something, if he had become famous. I mean, kind of like Ian Curtis with the epilepsy and all that, you know, the attention.
He kind of did flip out, though.
He did.
Well, he did.
In a sanitarium.
But it would have been a lot.
I'll tell you something I heard just recently I didn't know about. You know Starry Night?
Yeah.
There's letters to Theo, his brother, and his sister about him being inspired. The only time he was inspired by a poem, and it was sung for myself by Walt Whitman. That painting's inspired by Walt Whitman.
Cool.
Had a trip.
That's cool.
That's a good story.
When you come back, I'm going to show you that little tiny leaves of grass we have from the 1800s down at the beach house.
Oh, yeah. Alvin, here, let's hear some music. Thank you. Swat from Pedro show. Remember last week we had that lady from Germany. Well, she lives in England. Mm-hmm. The Angela. Band Now.
Yeah.
Angela Last, that was her name. And they did a song. They sent me this record as a benefit CD. Oh, God damn it. Hey, Peek.
Hi.
Yeah, we're on the air. Okay, so why don't you get down here and just let me carry on with the show.
Bye.
Okay. Okay, I think she brings some couch surfing. Peek's connected with the couchsurfing.com.
Oh, cool.
It's I've like the old ways that. Of touring. Yeah, people it's travel around conking on couches. Anyway, this benefit CD came out. God, I can't remember the cause, but they all do the same song, and the song is called Two of the Beatles Have Died. I think a little kid wrote it. And so that's Now, the band she's in, covered that their version of it. And then something from her. She has her own band. I found it. It's called Notebook of a Mermaid, and that was Below the Ice. And we started with, my friend up in San Francisco, Grux, sent me this soundtrack. Do you remember Attack of the Mushroom People in the 60s? Well, he sent me Mirai and Akiko, this song. Have you ever seen that movie? That movie is intense. Now, they colorized it. The good one is black and white. It was a weird movie. It was made in the 60s. A horror movie, you know. Who was the guy? Seymour? We had a host guy be on the TV.
Oh, yeah, the guy on...
Remember?
Seymour, yeah.
And then later on, there was a lady named Elvira.
Vampira was before that. Mm-hmm.
Well, Elvira kind of ripped off the Vampira. Yeah, but Seymour was great. He was original. Yeah. He ended up in a movie with Rosie Grier called Two-Headed Transplant.
That's the one with Ray Milland.
Ray Milland's in it, too.
And Ray Milland's sharing the body with Rosie Grier. And there's this little sexual reference. He's like... You know, the big black man and the old black guy, and it's kind of like, hey, not my fault, man.
Ray Milland, Lost Weekend,
right?
Yeah. Great movie. Okay, that's the end of the first hour. Wyatt from Pedro's show, April 12, 2009. Hold tight for hour two. April 12, 2009. It's the second hour of the Wyatt from Pedro's show.
Thank you.
From Pedro Show, we started the second hour off with Amor Verdadero by Parito Band. Now, this is a band in, is it Argentina or Peru or Chile? I'm sorry, I can't remember, but South America. And it's a band, would you call them inmates?
Oh.
They're in an insane asylum.
Oh, right,
whoa.
Right.
And it means birdies. Right.
Yeah, so they've got like a radio station?
I think they got a little band room and they made recordings.
I did down at the
HBH,
Harbor View House.
Yeah,
they had a thing like that going.
That's right. In fact, Rich Costigan asked me to do some jams.
I got
there.
To go in there once. It was nuts.
Literally.
Suddenly last summer, did you see that movie?
No.
With Liz Taylor, speaking about, you know, they're on an island, and Liz, she sees her brother get torn to pieces by the villagers.
There's a spiel on that, on the 12 Stations of the Cross, Johnny Thunders because the woman tells him really funny because he's gay, homosexual, and Liz, they have her way with him, and Liz is doing in a lunatic asylum, and the mother is Katharine Hepburn. Kind of like in that Long Day's Journey in the Night type of role, kind of creepy mom.
Okay. Then we heard Facile Demais by Star 61, another band. I can't remember the country. That's so disgusting. South America, I know. And then Same Orleans by Same Things. Now, Same Things has got Sam Duke, who I'm doing that Cuz project. He lives in Brighton. Remember when I recorded that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, now we're putting together the music. And he's got a band with this cat named Shige. This cat makes music with Game Boy.
Wow.
Some way of getting into the little music part and can actuate it. And Sam wanted horns on this. And Vince Maroney, who played in the pair of pliers with me, crew of Flying Saucer, I asked him to do it. First time Vince did stuff, you know, like this, where you don't have to be in the same studio nowadays. They send you the file and you just play along with it. So Vince got all happy. Now he's got Pro Tools.
Oh, that's cool.
And started. And then a buddy of Sam's named Daniel's got a band called Smokey Emery, and we heard Heart in the Head.
Heart in the Head or Heart in a Head?
A Heart in the Head. I-N-T. Oh, yeah. You know, like maybe where you piss.
Sounds like one of your terms.
Yeah, Heart in the Head.
Yes, Bob.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe he's talking about the kibasa.
I just like the idea that it makes you think.
Yeah, well, heart too doesn't mean corazon. It could mean the center, of, right? At the core.
The core.
Stace, what do you think is problem right now with art?
Oh my God, really? I don't know where to start with that.
No, it's just a question. Is there no problems?
Oh, nothing's perfect. Of course, there are problems. I don't know. It's a tough one. I think, you know, there's always a problem of, you know, the right artist and the right exposure. I mean, it's such
who gets in, who gets out.
It's such a delicate balance. Do you know what I mean? And
well, Bob was saying, like, if Vincent had too much attention, he might have not done the same kind of art.
It's hard. I mean, there's a lot you could... It's like, it's true. So it could be opposite.
Because he had a lot of woodshed.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the marketing. They did like, though, the way he's cranking them out the last couple of years. It's kind of like...
I guess what I would really like, I wish there was more sort of public funding and support for art. I wish it wasn't so private. I mean, it's good that it's again, a catch-22. It's good that it is, because I think you get the right focus, but it would be great if our society was more interested and involved in the arts, because I feel like it's such a small percentage.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what about with the Kodomo, with kids in school?
Yeah, it's like
do
the
you
first
think
thing
there's
to
enough
get cut.
Teaching?
They really cut back. That's they how always, I started drawing, just to get the kids.
It's like
to
art and music. Whatever. It's the first thing to get cut.
Science experiments, you know.
Yeah.
So that's a definite problem.
That's a major problem.
Do you think people have to kind of be maybe educated in appreciation?
Absolutely, just like anything else, you know, because it's, I think, you know, art is such a subjective, you know, medium or item that you do have to be sort of, I mean, everyone is going to have a gut reaction, whether or not they know why. So I think education would just help you understand, like, it's okay not to like something and why, but, you know, instead of just assuming it's bad.
What about the other side of it? Do you think... institutions like schools, do you think they produce artists, art makers?
That's tough. Like art school, you mean like grad? It's hard, you know, I think it's...
Is there a group thing?
There's meant to...
Do they make more... The argument is usually they make more teachers.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think being an artist is the hardest job there is. I mean, you put yourself out there on so many levels... And success is so hard, you know. It's an extremely difficult difficult career. I mean, on all levels, intellectual,
that's
emotional.
Agreement, you know.
Yeah, it's like you. I mean, you're putting yourself out there, like your thoughts, your soul,
judged.
Your heart. To yeah, basically by people who don't always know what they're looking at, and the lucky ones that do.
Do you think everybody's judged fair? I mean, if someone has acquired a name, a reputation, is his stuff treated different than someone coming from boonies?
Could
you
be.
Can you do no wrong?
Yeah.
Did you see the article? The Times had a big thing with quite a range of opinions on whether there should be funding for the arts, and some pretty out there artists are saying it would homogenize things because, you know, you've got someone now bankrolling. They're going to say, like, just like the record company, you can't put that on there because this is going to offend some, you know.
Yeah.
That it might stifle creative. There were really good arguments on both sides. I mean,
it's a fine line, for
but
sure.
Schools really need it. I mean, these kids can't think in creative problem solving because they're not doing science experiments. They're not trying to make something on their own. And I think that.
I think you're right. No,
what do you think about artistic movements?
Movements? It's hard to define.
Like, what are we in right
one.
Now? Was last one postmodern?
You could say that, yeah. I mean, it's hard to say when you're in. I mean, I think there's a lot of movements going on. I think, like, Shepherd Fairey and those guys are in one, and Banksy are this sort of street, like, out there in your face is one movement. I think, you know, obviously, like, what Raymond and sort of like these other artists that came, you know, to, you know, have been working the last 30 years or sort of another. It's difficult right now. I think there's a lot going on and that has a lot to do with sort of the globalization of not just art, but things in general. When you, with so much access on the internet, you know, it's not hard to see work of an artist in another country. You know, things
or
become,
school, a movement.
Yeah, it becomes... And also for those artists to interact on other levels. So I think
that's
things
good,
get
good
really,
point,
really, you know,
but
integrated.
Is exposure wide? You know, we thought when we got 500 channels of television that we'd have all, it'd be like PBS meets indie. And instead we've got just 500 more infomercials.
Same.
You know, where it's still not that wide range. I mean, Raymond, I wonder if it would be harder now in the sense that I met Raymond in what? 1986, and he already said it's a long apprenticeship. He'd been drawing for 14 years, and I mean working every day, and self-taught and all that. Is it harder for someone like that to get recognized, or?
You know, bottom line, it's that there's no one path. You know, everyone's going to come sort of to, I believe, you know, what they're meant to do, or, you know, through their own organic way. And for Raymond, you know, he started out very underground and with the music scene.
Album covers.
Exactly, and really
flyers.
Sort of, you know, made that bridge into, you know, the contemporary art world. I mean, there are a lot of younger artists now that come straight out of grad school and, you know, are very well educated and sort of jump right into it. Sort of the opposite.
Yeah,
know,
Raymond got a degree in economics.
Raymond,
yeah.
So yeah, how many are really bright, you know, I mean, taking the bus to UCLA and getting a degree in economics and by about the age of 19, you know, because he'd skipped a grade or two, I mean, I don't know, that's an element.
You know,
do you need
did,
to be schooled in art, in other words?
He did do some comics in the school paper at UCLA.
He did the UCLA Bruin, he did, the political cartoons.
Yeah.
Which is really, really funny and weird.
Yeah, he doesn't really...
I haven't seen too many.
I mean, he's never denied it, but he don't really promote that.
I know. It's tough, though.
Fine, but the Raymond, you know, it's just fun to see the evolution.
I like the idea that he's known in his life. He didn't have to be gone and posthumous.
Mm-hmm. That's usually,
it seems like... It seems... Like, to get this exposure, you got to be kind of like a hustler.
But Raymond just had the
self-promoter,
confidence.
You know, we were talking about Whitman, but Raymond doesn't really...
Raymond's like Lennon, John Lennon, in the sense that John Lennon was convinced they were going to be number one. And Raymond, I remember when we went to get the camera to do that Morrison film, we couldn't get anyone to play Jimbo, and so we buy this camera over at Best Buy.
And he asked the salesman if he wants to play Jim. And Raymond goes, well, it's not exactly a Disney budget, but I can promise you this, people will be watching it 50 years from now. And he had a real good sense that this stuff, he was going to be successful without being calculating about it, which I think is kind of interesting. You know, by staying true to himself, you know.
That's what I think what it's about, being true to yourself.
Yeah, I always thought that he just had to do it. He's got incredible drive to produce work.
Yeah, it's fun watching him work on so many things.
Yeah, let's play some music.
Yet.
Switzerland, where all the yodelers be, to try to learn to yodel with a yodel-a-dee. I climbed a big high mountain on a clear and sunny day, fell in love with a yodeling gal and could not get away. Oh, she taught me to yodel, yodel-a-dee, yodel-a-dee, yodel-a-dee. She taught me to yodel. Teach you how to yodel just like me. It's easy while you're singing to go yodel, lady. First you take a deep breath and then exhale, 1, 2, 3. Then you'll hear the yodeling if you listen close to me. This is how to yodel, yodel, lady, lady, yodel, lady, lady, yodel, lady. This is how to yodel, yodel, lady.
Pedro show. Sorry, Bob. Bob had something very interesting to say, but I cut him off. That was Kenny Roberts with She Taught Me How to Yodel. And then we had Masterpiece, that's with two S's, by the Ass Clown.
What's with that?
And then Lonesome Dronesome by a Thrifty Astronaut. That's an interesting name. And Dissatisfied by the Scuzzies.
Isn't that a cosmonaut, a thrifty? That's
right. It's time for Brother Matt and the Spin Cycle.
Cool.
Thank you very much, Brother Man.
Cool.
For your installment.
Easter chill mode.
Yeah, Easter chill mode. That was the modus.
Yeah, that was the modus.
Operandi.
Yeah, with a little tranquilizer touch.
Spinach.
Yeah, a little psychedelic tranquilizer on the backside.
Yeah, and now as you were doing that, we were joined by some more guests.
Yeah, full house, welcome.
Yeah, welcome. Peek.
Hi.
You brought some couch surfing component.
Hey there.
Associate.
This is Ben.
I get a lengthy introduction everywhere I go. Yeah.
He's a hacker.
Oh. And then she tells everyone my secrets. It's awful.
So couchsurfing.com brought you here.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh. And you guys know about couchsurfing.com.
She's had several crews here.
Got it. Cool.
Cat from Italy, cat from England, cat from Maine.
Denmark.
Detroit.
Chicago.
Yeah. Via Chicago, right? Originally
yes.
Detroit.
True.
And yeah. Wow, look.
I need to close the hatch.
The hatch is whooping up on him. Yeah. It's hatching. But we'll talk to you soon. We got
sure,
to go
I'll
to
be here.
Next hour. It's the second hour of April 12, 2009, Watt Pepito Show. Hold tight for hour three. August 12, 2009. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Money.
must admit you clean up pretty well. I brought my dagger and the gun. Hang up the fucking telephone. Do you recall the guarantee? How they promised security?
Take me away. old newspapers that he dragged around in a duffel bag behind him, giving his rap to anyone and to no one in particular. And everybody's got a dog. And everybody's got a dog. And everybody's got a dog. Kennedy Airport is very, very big. Kennedy Airport is very, 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 very big. They got bars. They got bars in Kennedy Airport. They got bars. They got bars. They got bars. They got bars in the airport. The airplanes go up and down. The airplanes go up and down. The airplanes go up and down. Watching for the poison rain. Watching for the poison rain. Watch up for the poison rain. Watch up for the poison rain. Someone's gonna give me a sleeping pill. Someone's gonna give me a sleeping pill. Someone's gonna give me a sleeping pill. In the bar at Kennedy Airport. In the bar, in the bar, in the bar at the airport. In the bar, in the bar at Kennedy Airport.
Wad from Pedro Show. We started the third hour off with Can't Wash Your Hands Enough in New York City by John DeFreeze. Now, John DeFreeze, I know him from a band called Agitpop. We do a song called Big Band Theory.
Yeah.
John wrote that and adapted it to our world. And Agitpop has gotten back together.
Phone.
And from their new album, we have Everything's Not All Right. And then we have Village of Idiots by Jute Blue. Jute Blue, some cats I met after a gig. What's Long Beach? Prospector?
Oh, yeah.
And these cats, they move from South Dakota to SoCal to, find fame. I wish them luck. And then a band called Appomattox with Either Way. And then Everybody's Got a Dog by Infrared Radiation Orchestra. This guy, he told me some story about Ronnie, but I can't remember. I feel terrible about it. I should ask him about that. He wants to jam with me. I'm going to be thinking about him a lot this tour. But, where's Peak? She down? Oh, there. Introduce your guest. Not with tiny voice, so.
Well, I think Ben's going to introduce herself.
No. Okay, can you explain?
She's very... we've done a lot of introductions lately, and we've been trying to work on how... We're actually practicing both real and fake introductions for this show, and I don't think we ever decided on which one it was, like...
Yeah. Gotta get your elevator speech down.
Exactly, right. Which strip club did we meet at? No, that wasn't it. No. The all nude one, she was working. No. There's a lot you don't know about her. Exactly. Yeah. She likes to be mysterious.
She was taking the money, that's how she was working. She was a cash register lady. No. You went online?
You registered on Couchsurfer.
I want to get into your mission.
My mission. I live here. I'm actually one of the locals. I've slept on a couch in every major U.S. city.
Yeah. So your involvement. So you're actually not on a couch tour?
Not right now, no.
So this is something Pete was telling us about the other week, about the community, not actually the modus for the thing getting going, which was to be a kind of way.
To be able to travel,
It's now bridged into, like, social network.
Exactly. For people who have the same sort of interests.
Yeah, right. She had a cat she brought who fixed her car, Jared.
I met him.
He's not out of town.
That's right. He lives here.
So your last two couchsurfing.com people are not couchsurfing.
I'm not very active right now.
Yeah, kind of slack.
Is this going to be franchise? I'm almost getting to that's going to be.
Now, you know about. You know
it's
about
free. Million. This well, celebrated that, a million it's members.
Kind of, you know, it's a great thing.
That's amazing.
You know the ethics, and we've talked about on the show before. Hey, go back to when I first started touring. This is what you did. I call out from the stage at the end of the gig. He's got safe place for the boat and room on the deck for the conch.
Well, interesting enough, hopping on your van to the next few cities.
Oh, yeah.
I've called out for couchsurfers to come to the show. And then they automatically asked, would the band need a place to sleep?
Yeah, one big happy couch.
So I'm part of a culture that led something to this coach. I think it's great.
Full circle now.
You know, the more people out seeing people and meeting people, and likewise, the better. And having to do it autonomous, not having to go through ridiculous things. Travelocity or
some handlers.
Are you guys playing? Here's with that, the SST bands, because I had never heard of that before. You know.
Conquer people's houses?
Yeah.
Punk was little and most people hated it, so you had to be very self-reliant and pulled together with the people who did like it.
I'm actually a jazz musician. I mean, what's with the stigma?
Well, maybe they were doing that too, because that was a minority music.
Sure.
Some of those clubs, especially the hard boppers, that was a tiny scene. So I think there's parallels to our thing. She had a couch surf tour plan to go to New Orleans.
That's right. She's still doing it.
She's ditching it.
She's ditching it. Oh,
she's getting in the boat with us and doing the first five gigs.
Yeah.
Get
into there.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. She had this thing planned and then she saw the routing that we were doing. And in New Orleans, I'm actually going to Baton Rouge, but that's close enough.
You guys aren't actually sleeping in the van, are you?
No, we conquer people's houses.
Okay, got it. So it's
I did it 30
similar.
Years. I still do it.
Do you have a similar route you take on these 55 show, 57 days or whatever?
Well, this one's 32. It's kind of a smaller tour. It's 32 gigs, 35 days. Or 37 days. There's two driving days and 3 days to make the album in Brooklyn. What I usually do if it's spring, like this is, I go counterclockwise. So I get out of the south before it's too sweaty and wait for the north to thaw. They're still having big snows.
It's crazy.
You know, and then if it's fall, I do clockwise, and I get out of the north before it gets cold and wait for the south to cool off. I mean, vaudeville people probably figured this shit out years ago.
The birds, they fly north and then south, and you're just
you follow the good weather.
You follow exactly.
You don't know how cute weather is when you're touring, when you're in the boat. The boat is the center of the touring universe, man. And I have had to drive through snowstorms, through hurricanes, white knuckle motherfucking shit. When I go leave on a tour, I always promise myself one top priority, and that's I'm going to get my men back to their wives or girlfriend or mother, father. I really feel big responsibility to that. So the weather is real keen. And also us being here in Cali, we don't know. Sometimes a little rain in February. Sometimes it gets. The rest of the country isn't like SoCal, and so you have to be aware of this. And if I do the whole country, it's about 14, 15, 16,000 miles. So I do all the driving. I get really sore hands from less younger hands. So these are from bass strings here on show.
So the calluses in a different place.
And then these here on the palms are from the steering wheel.
That one looks like a rosy.
Oh.
Yeah, big ones. But the vibrations on the wheel helps. And we're a small thing. I got Tom on guitar and Raul. We got no assistant hair tech.
No stylist.
Except we're going to have some ballast. peak ballast. No, peak actually is way into pictures, so I'm gonna have lots of grainy, blurry. No, she's actually
that's
really
my
good.
Thing.
So, have you hosted your pad?
My current pad, no. I've got some housemates who I'm trying to convince them and work on them. And, you know, look, it's, you know, you've got these profiles. Mm-hmm. Like, these people are vouched for, like, 20 other people. Trust me. They've been doing this for years. You can trust them. And it's just one of those things. It's a culture that they're not into, and they haven't.
How long have you been in it?
I've been in it officially about 6 months, but I've just been staying with friends.
Old-timer?
Not really, yeah. I mean, after college, you know, everyone kind of split up, went all over the country, and so all of a sudden I had someone I could stay with in any town. I stayed in New York City for a summer, one couch per week for about 3 months. Never repeated the same friend, never repeated the same couch, just because, and by the end of it, you know, I was staying on people's couches who I had met earlier in the summer, just because, just didn't want to overstay my welcome, meet some new people, and they're like, that sounds great, you know, everyone complains about rent in New York City, so, found a way to cheat the system.
It's literally a network thing.
Yeah.
Now, the people that want to be host, how does that work, I mean?
They just send you a little note that says, hey, I'm going to be in town. You guys have heard all this before.
No, I mean the people that want to host for the first time. I know that you screen the people. You have to get the recommendations to be welcome, but you say, I'm going to open up my house.
You take a picture of your couch. You know, like on Facebook, you put a picture of yourself, or MySpace, or whatever. You put a picture of yourself. And couch surfing, you take a picture of your couch, and you're like, this is you know, come stay here. This is what you're here to see. You know, I'm only secondary to the couch. It's pretty fun.
Driveways of the rich and famous. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
But he has had a party.
I had a party that I invited couch surfers to. We got some random couch surfers, and then a lot of L.A. couch surfers.
Tell them about where you live.
I live in a cabin in the forest on a mountain in Topanga Canyon.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
from Malibu.
Got it. So you know what it's like. It's beautiful. Sure. It feels like
curvy,
you're not even
roads.
Yeah. Like you're not even in the city
part of
anymore.
World. Yeah.
Bad for fires. You can't get the fire trucks up them.
Yep.
A lot of the music scene was there in the 60s, you know, Spirit and Kaleidoscope, which was David Lilly Hanna Band.
Yep. Topanga, I think the singer of Canada Heat died.
Yeah, the Topanga Corral, for the longest time, you could still see this place on one of those turns.
Yeah.
Just a little, looks like a hitching post that they would have. Sometimes someone like Neil Young or Dylan would play there just because they lived a couple miles up the road, you know. But yeah, it was, you're talking about Bob Hyde?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Owl voice. He's not like owl.
They're actually having a Topanga Days next weekend, which is like a festival where they have a lot of music, they have a lot of shows. I don't know if you guys know anyone playing them.
Botanicum or...
Yeah, Will Gear, Theatricum,
Botanicum. The college in this commune of old people. It was really kind of, wait, he's on the show. The show was still on TV and he's out. Yeah, it was trippy. He's kind of cool guy.
Sounds like
thanks. Beast. Part of the couchsurfing.com.
My pleasure.
Situation, that's right. Stace?
Yeah?
What artists do you think are happening now? Your favorite, your opinion.
Oh my gosh, that's another tough. You've got a lot of tough questions today. I have many favorites.
Who would you like to let Watt from Pedro show? Just be aware of.
Yeah, how about an up and coming that's still obscure and no one really knows about?
No one really knows about.
To your place.
Well, there are a few. There's one. I mean, if I think locally, I know an artist named Emily Halpern, who I think is really great, and she does a lot of photography and a lot of ephemeral sort of works about not just longing and emotion, but tying together two really complex thoughts and bringing them together. Whether photography, she also works in sculpture and sort of all of our mixed media. That's one thing I've noticed a lot about this new and the younger generation is, you know, previously, I think it was at the end.
We had a power surge, so we're back on.
Recreating the power.
Not to keep anything from you people, but we had a situation here and we lost a couple minutes. So Stacey's going to tell us about some other artists that she's excited about, wants you to know of.
Well, I think we were talking about before when it cut out, just that sort of younger, like this next generation or the new generation of artists having not being tied to any one discipline. And another artist who I think really uses that to his advantage is Paul Chan. And he's a Chinese artist. He's born in China, but he's grew up in America. He lives and works in New York. And a lot of his work is extremely political,
yeah,
but very subtle. And he uses a lot of media to sort of bring that with language, and also then portraying these in film, sculpture, drawings. One thing he did, I don't know if you know, they did this big biennial in New Orleans, like after the hurricane.
Yeah, Katrina.
Exactly. And before that even, he staged a production, not even a theater, out in the Seventh Ward of Waiting for Godot. And it was extremely powerful and wonderful.
So he puts on plays too.
Well, that was just like, wow. Exactly. So, I mean, that's just
Raymond does movies and sings and bands.
And so you can be very versatile. Like,
we just did the third session for Pumpkin, the most Pumpkin Heads.
Oh, yeah. How's that going?
Yeah. Probably in the older days, you had to focus more because it just took more wherewithal.
And I think that was also like how you were taught.
Okay.
You know, I think
it was the culture.
And also, there's a lot more technology now. You can be, you know, film. I mean, these things are more accessible.
And I think with arts in general, it's supposed to reflect what the world is.
Now.
And the world now is about, you know, cross-cultural, mixed, and there's a lot of this and that. So I think it's only natural that people are picking different things up and expressing it that way.
It kind of flows.
Is this a weird question, but is there some artists you ain't really digging now?
That's a tough one, too. I mean,
plenty.
There's all, everyone's got their opinions.
I think there's a default.
I read somewhere once
you can't like everyone.
Adolf Hitler was a failed painter.
Yeah, he was a failed painter.
How did it fail? Like, somebody, actually, critics get together and say, no.
He wasn't allowed in the school.
Yeah, he didn't get in.
Yeah. So he quit it.
The race he wanted to create was everything he wasn't, you know. He didn't look like any of those.
Well, my point is, my point is that maybe if an artist is rejected, he gets reaction. Like, hey, I'll start a
take over the world.
Exactly. I think it's interesting, too, if you look ever see like Hitler's paintings, they're very calculated. You know, he was very, I mean...
people, right, buildings?
There were little people, but they were like landscapes and very, like, the compositions were extremely balanced. And I think, you know, maybe that's why the school...
What do you think about his stuff on sale?
His painting?
Yeah. There's controversy.
That's extremely controversial. I think it's really creepy and bizarre. And then you think, well, who's...
What about John Wayne Gacy?
That's creepy, too.
Pogo the Clown.
Yeah.
I know a cat.
That's really disturbing.
I know a cat. Who sent him a picture in jail, and he sent him a painting.
I do, too, when he was young. Do we know that this is the same person? Is it Ricky Vodka?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that painting.
Wow.
That's really disturbing. I'm like, what?
Well, that's like people got upset.
Because Pogo's got the fangs, and
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, what about this idea of outsider art? Maybe not mean criminal people, but mentally disturbed.
Yeah.
There's some debate over this stuff, too, right? Controversy.
Definitely. I mean,
are people like circus freaking these people out? Or
that's one way to look at it. I don't know. There's two sides to every coin. Could be an outlet for these people. Is someone, you know,
I played the Pajaritos, right? Mm-hmm. Those people, institutionalized, that's the better word.
Yeah.
And they're making a band. They're making songs.
That's cool.
I think that's cool. I think where it gets a little hairy if it's someone tries to, exploit whatever their talents or whatever they're interested in. But, I mean, if it's an expression,
what do you think
outlet,
about,
why not?
Because you were talking about grad school people.
Yeah.
So these are formally trained.
Yeah.
Most of them probably end up designing toothpaste too. Because you were saying it's a hard field.
It's tough.
If they're lucky.
So yeah.
What's your idea about commercial art?
Commercial
art at this moment,
mm-hmm.
the stuff, artifacts we're looking at that we call beautiful, in its day, it might have been its merch art, right?
Yeah, like you mean like design and like things like that?
Yeah, like when we find archaeologists find
stuff.
Well, wow, just because it survived all this time.
It's
not even in an artistic context. It's a totally utilitarian. It's got to do something.
Exactly.
But it becomes, because the context changes, it comes from the past, it comes from exotic Now it is art.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe the toothpaste tube of now becomes... I think, yeah, Warhol was saying something about that. With
the mass of the art, well, yeah.
You know, I think with the music, you see these cycles where... I think part of the punk thing, and like you had these guys on here that were playing in a real band where they got tired of prog rock, where they were doing a little bit too many things going on, and strip it down to the real basics and get down to... That's why you had even things such as Einstein's New Button, the idea of, you know, using something real basic and pure again, and then it'll get all busy with...
What about, you know, Kafka with the two desks? You know about that?
Yeah.
He worked at an insurance place, but on the side he did his writing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they have to pay the bill.
You have to pay the bill, exactly.
Didn't write really
he was an oil
45,
man, right?
Yeah, because sometimes you have to get the experience restored.
Or you have to run live, or family or something, so you have to do the art on the side.
Yeah.
Is there a thing, I don't know Raymond very well, but I don't know a lot of the culture of artists, but is there kind of a attitude? I know there is with music people sometimes, who's doing hobby and who's 100%, is there like this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Who's slumming as a corporate artist or a Mersch, and not taking the chance of living on an edge to pursue a vision?
I think
like somebody who Vincent was, who's a great hero.
Exactly. I think that goes back to, maybe that goes a lot back to like those galleries and artists you were talking about maybe in Santa Fe, like who are really extremely commercial and can make a painting like to a color scheme to match a couch.
And they're working off the same sunset. Whereas Raymond has this thing. There's artists like Raymond that prefer not to be, they're not influenced by the outside world a whole lot. They're creative because they're doing completely their own thing. They're not paying attention, so-and-so's doing that, and I'm going to mix this in. You know what I mean?
There's nothing wrong with influence.
I know.
Not at all.
What's that?
I feel like there's nothing wrong with influence
as well.
Of course
not.
Yeah.
It's a rare person who can
do both.
Raymond uses text.
Yeah.
You got to say that's an influence.
Absolutely.
Amazing artists don't share with you what their influences are. They just interpret it in their heads, and this is their, you know, output. You don't particularly...
What about no output? I know some career. Marcel Duchamp. He ends up playing right? He is the work.
He is the work, yeah.
He ends up the work. He transcends many movements, right? Dada, surreal.
Starts,
right. And ends up playing chess. No more painting, no more sculpting, no more...
Just done.
A life. A lot of those... I'm reading these books of this guy, Francis Picabia.
Picabia, yeah.
He becomes the work himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It becomes very
what
close.
Would we call them? A celebrity or somebody. They'd have a TV show and you'd have the panelists. They're known from some movie or TV show they did many
what's
years.
My line?
Yeah, Paul Lynn or something. Yeah. And all they're known is for...
Orson B.
I think there's this component to artists, too.
It can be. I mean,
it's not always the work.
No,
it's
because they are the work.
They
are. And in the end, like,
and
it always comes
from them.
And
it's currency with in the art world, the persona.
I don't know. I think, for me, it doesn't matter, you know.
Well, for me, like, I'm socially retarded.
It
so
gets the buzz going.
I think that sometimes it can be a shtick, you know, and a crutch, and that's not... In the end, what art is about, like if you start with that. I think, you know, with Picabia or Duchamp or even like with musicians, like it can become that. It evolves naturally. Just people, because people are people.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting with Raymond is you can see how he weaves in. Raymond will throw in something. We'll be watching wrestling, or he'll be reading the National Enquirer, and so he'll throw in so many different disparate influences that he comes up with his own. It evolves into a language, like you're saying, he's invented a new language, which is really fun. And I used to ask him, where'd you get that thing? He had this one with a kid, you know, I slid every rubber ball the same. And he goes, you didn't hear about that kid that was caught doing this? And a lot of, you know... He's just incredibly wide in what he, media and printed and local TV.
Play some music
and
you can gush.
Off air. Mountain School.
Juan from Pedro's show. Our last music for this edition. Mountain Bar.
Mountain School.
Yeah.
Mountain School at the Mountain Bar in Chinatown, I think on Gimling Way.
Yeah, Sid and I walked in the middle.
I'll tell you about that place. If you look across the street, if you're looking straight at the hatch and you look port and across the street, that's the Hong Kong Cafe where I saw many gigs in the late 70s. Great gigs.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good place.
Mm. Little Yopar I lived sometimes. God, I can't I would never do the shit I did when I was... this is the late 70s, but, you know, we're working all the time. Some of those times I'm doing three jobs and put myself through school, I would be so fucking tired. But I had the boat. So I got Deep Boone and Georgie or whoever with us, and they're all conked out, and I'm feeling tired, and I just pull the Volkswagen Beetle off on the side of the freeway and just conk. I would never do that.
No.
You know, I'm talking like just south of that four level thing, right there.
Now they do a breathalyzer, and even if you have been sleeping, they don't care. It's
of course. Or somebody come and kill me or rob me or I don't know.
Was it Hong Kong Cafe and Madame Wong's in Chinatown, right?
Madame Wong's was more the new wave stuff. I saw a gig there once. The Bags played there and what was her name? Esther?
Esther. Yeah.
She shut the gig down. She goes, "This is not music." Like, what the fuck?
Gone.
Let us decide. I mean, you want that was weird. But you know what? That was in a way it was kinda neat because it's I have some kind of standards. Anyway, we just heard Nile River Delta by Tall Trees in the Sun. I'm digging it because it was all bass. And I Try to Be Polite from Val and the Bitches. That was sent to me from people in Sweden. They have a band. And Sperm Ridden Burden by Who Carries a Lantern. This is one of them Cookie Monster type of bands, and the bass player says he likes my playing. It's trippy how they got to turn them up in the band. And then a song from why I brought up the Mountain Bar and stuff, because we played there. Myself, Takasan, Nels Klein, Devin Hoff, Flea,
Money
Mark Nishida, and Tom Watson. Tom Watson actually put it together. So we should call that... we'll call that band Tom Watson and His Clients. And Get Along, Little Chug Chug, live at the Mountain Bar. I guess we were actually supposed to do a talk. But, you know, we started playing, and by the time, you know, after 70 minutes, like, what are we going to talk about?
Talk to their instruments. I mean, that's a language.
Yeah. No kidding. And we started off with Hong Kong by Schooner. Ben.
Yes, sir. You guys all call him Sir, right? That's what Peek told me.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
Yeah.
As you were, sir. You're on your holding pattern right now, but do you have couch surfing plan?
Sorta. I mean, trying to start my own business and something I can run from just a laptop wherever. I mean, the kind of work I can do. Ideally, just anywhere on a computer.
So you're gonna take this computer with you and start surfing.
Just traveling, yeah. Starting. The weird thing is, everyone I meet, they're like, "Oh, I'm gonna go to Malaysia. I'm gonna go to Siberia. I'm gonna go travel." I've been, you know, to Europe. I've been around, but there's so much right here that I feel like I just want to go drive and find out what a different place
you're talking
is like.
U.S.
Even, just
you're
the U.S. Yeah,
Pedro.
Exactly.
Although you should check out our town.
But I mean, you just have to drive across. Yeah, in L.A. You just have to drive across.
San Pedro.
First time in San Pedro. I'm new to L.A. as well.
L.A. County's got a lot of hidden treasures.
That's
so
the thing.
You found them when you were originally from. You mean you picked Topanga out of nowhere?
I picked Topanga because I was first here in this little crappy corporate apartment. I actually did host there because they gave me a spare bedroom. But I was trying to get to the beach. I was just like, okay, here's this windy little road that gets to the beach, and I fell in love with it. Like,
well,
I grew up in Ithaca, New York.
Yeah,
wearing the shirt everyone on the radio show can see.
Cornell.
Closer to the
exactly, that's where I went to school.
And I think, what was his name? The Billions of Stars?
Sagan.
Yeah, he worked there for a while. That's right. Big influence. That's actually where the Mars rovers are being controlled from right now, even though it's, you know, joint with NASA. Anyways.
Yeah, very calm winters.
Yeah, right. Middle of nowhere, like 5 feet of snow.
In Schenectady for...
I lived there a little bit too.
I lived
in
there
Niskayuna.
For a couple of years. They had a nuclear plant there.
That's
my father
right.
was trained there. Yeah, General Electric.
So you lived actually in Niskayuna, where the nuclear plant was.
And we were outside. We were in Boston Spa, a little village.
Boston Spa. Okay, don't know.
Yeah, it was the only time I lived in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Burn the trash.
That's right. Wow. You can do that up there.
In the woods.
And the leaves, yeah. It smells great. Not the trash, the leaves. Yeah.
I thought the pollution laws had changed by that. I mean, this is over.
Yeah,
40,
I worked with a woman that
died
from leukemia that swam in some of those polluted lakes up in the Finger Lakes.
Where GE was dumping a lot of.
Yeah. It's crazy.
They're dredging it up
there?
Now.
Wasn't Kurt Vonnegut in Ithaca?
No, he grew up in this tiny town called Scipio. Wow, I can't believe you know this. I actually dated a girl for a number of years who lived in Scipio. There's only about 500 people there. It's this tiny little town, but he set one of his novels there. It's the
Talk
middle
of tiny
middle
towns
nowhere.
Here in Cali. You go up PCH, there's a town north. Yeah.
18 people.
18
yeah.
people.
Wow.
In California.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
Half of must be in the government.
Well, yeah, one's the mayor, one's the police chief, one's the... Yeah.
Your two wives right by, too? San Simeon.
It's harmonious.
Hearst Castle.
Oh, yeah.
And at the beach is the big elephant seals. And
I haven't
you should
seen
take
that.
A trip there.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. I don't want to be a tourist. I want to experience a place for, you know, a month, you know, 6 months at a time and really come to understand it. But you can do that in every community, you know, across
the city. And you know what? Things change, too.
So exactly. So you can't... It's like
I've been tourists. I've been torn for 30 years. Some of these towns, I've seen so many.
Yeah.
But if you got your eyes and ears and mind open, there's difference. Nothing is static.
So I can't ever finish my journey, essentially, is what you're saying.
Right.
I can start exploring
the
and then
motion,
just start all over again. And, man, yeah, okay. That's actually kind of... I haven't lived more than 10 months in a spot since 2002 or so. I'm something of a nomad.
Wow.
So
that's what I noticed about young people when I started touring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People, I'm going to live in Portland. I'm going to live in Chapel Hill.
That's right.
I never had the nerve.
No one's going to be like a man you'll count ever again, you know.
I remember being, you know, my papa's a sailor, and the fucking dreaded thing was the orders. Huh? They'd come in the mail. You have 30 days to report it. My mother'd have to get us all out of school, pack up the shit. And finally, we came to Peter. She said, fuck this. We got the orders again for Alameda.
Mm-hmm.
He did engine room, so they put him in the Enterprise. Not the Starship. And then my mother says, fuck this. It's over. Fuck the orders. But, you know, 30... Now these young... They give themselves
we
orders.
We do it voluntarily.
Like,
yeah.
I want to live here now. I want to live there.
It's forced change. It's good.
Change
is good.
Well, what I do, I tour, so I do see a lot, but the bungee cord snaps me back to Pedro.
That's a good way to do it, though, because then you get to see everything, but you also have a community and roots. And
yeah, because I can't imagine myself not having a thermos bottle stuffed myself in.
Yeah.
I don't have the nerve. And there's something about living all over. But you know what? Probably for a period of the life, it's probably a good thing. A life is made of different things. And maybe
different
a Roman
chapters.
Period. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you travel the U.S., you'll see a lot of different territory. Mm-hmm. Bayou, mountain, desert, seaside, forest.
Yeah, and all those people get their stuff they do to trip on and keep themselves entertained. So
I always wonder that. When I see a town, I don't think, wow, this is where I get the gas for the boat. It's like, why was this town built?
Who spends 30 years of their life here, and what do they do?
But, you know, the change now is with the computer, like you said,
you can
be anywhere you want. You're not
tied
to...
Right.
Yeah.
There's a
plant
is here, and that,
this is your word
that era of manufacturing, that sort of... it's gone, and that's kind of good, I think.
It frees up a lot. And, I mean, people are sending you music from Sweden, from wherever. I mean, that's...
And I
Japan.
Even play on their music. These kids, I never even met them or their bands, and I'm... On their music.
Exactly. That's
great.
That wouldn't have happened.
Put your bass here. Now I get to learn. I get to be contemporary. I'm not just artifact.
Yeah.
I'm actually mixing in. Yeah, so there's some good things about the technology.
Yep.
But you know what?
Smaller.
The thing that's really making it move is the spirit. Because that stuff is just...
It's just a
technologies,
tool.
Yeah, that's right. They don't have the spirit, the will, the movement, the natural curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I like it when she brings the couch surfing people over. They all are like charged up people.
I don't think that is a compliment.
Well, they're pioneers, they're adventurous. I mean, that's why they're moving.
Yeah, but I think it's enough for everyone to have their own version of it.
I had this little get-together of couch surfers at my place. Peek was talking about it. There was one guy, he was probably like 50, 55, white hair. Like he looked older than you. So, I mean, you know, maybe you just look young, and I'm sure... that's the case, but I think he'd been traveling on couches for months at that point, and
wow.
He just came to hang out with these people, and it's kind of like instant friends, you know, like we all knew what he was about, and he knew that he could come to this little get together. I know.
That's kind of nice. You know, there used to be a stigma about people being even over 30 going back to college or something. You know, Herman Green got his.
Yeah.
Started college in his 50s or something like that. He's a PhD.
So, but, yeah, we're not all just, like, you know, gung-ho, like, 25-year-old, you know, like, sowing wild roses.
Yeah,
like,
you're not encumbered, you know, maybe by either a family
or... I could
or
see,
or
especially some cat with the, quote, midlife crisis. And
yes.
It's like,
yeah.
Fuck this.
Yeah. Yep.
Getting out of town.
I want to reinvent experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, look, we're at the end of the show. I want to thank everybody for coming on. Bob.
Thanks.
Thank
you.
Stace, thanks for your first time being on the show.
That's great.
Ben, thank you for
my
your
pleasure.
First time.
Yeah.
I got a spiel here to do. These people want to film me doing my laundry, and Brother Matt has made his pad available so we don't have to use laundromat.
Now you're going to air your dirty laundry?
I think the next...
she's been saving that joke for hours, yeah.
I just thought of it.
But I get sweaty in gigs.
Uh-huh.
Brother Matt, we've got... it's interesting just to see the... you know, the interesting array of people passing through here.
Very interesting array.
You know, it tends to be sort of these entrepreneurial types.
Bob, I got in the show.
I thought you were done.
We were just talking.
Okay, so this is the last show before I go on tour.
Have a righteous tour.
But I'm going to try to do some on tour, okay? But you know where my heart is with you here, Brother Mary.
Right on.
At the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point, somewhere north of the equator, west of the Rockies.
Right on.
It's been the April 12, 2009 Watt from Pedro show. Keep your powder dry.
Cool.